Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a Kezsource family production. This podcast exists in large part because of KezCM, the content marketing business inside Kezsource Inc. So what does KezCM do? You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? Well, that's what we do. Content creation and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at KezCM, we exist to help business leaders build a meaningful legacy that is worth living and leaving. Learn more by visiting KezCM.com. In this episode, we discuss the truth about entrepreneurship, the growth of Charlotte, North Carolina, and balance. Our guest today is Brian King, president of AM King. AM King is an innovative firm in the design, engineering, construction, and facility services industry. Brian is a graduate of the University of Florida and has more than 30 years' experience managing design and construction projects all across the world. Brian's examples of building his business and buildings from the ground up were on full display in our chat. His success in business have us so excited to feature him on this podcast. And with so much to talk about, let's get right into this episode and welcome Brian King.
I love to hear stories, and I like telling my story, but I love hearing other people's stories too.
Right.
And you know, the real stories. You hear so many stories, or not hear, but you read about the big entrepreneurs. You know, we tend to think of the big guys. You know, right. Elon Musk and the Zuckerbergs, and that's not reality.
Right.
Just like playing sports. You know, Tom Brady. You know, it's not reality for every kid going out on a football field.
Right.
And that's the same with his entrepreneurship. So,
right.
I really like hearing those stories and hearing from entrepreneurs who really spent the time in the trenches and how they got there and how they got out of those trenches, or maybe they're still in the trenches and maybe they'll never get out of them to begin with.
Right.
So it's exciting and it's.
I agree. The extreme examples, though, of what, like an Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg or Steve Jobs, it's because everyone knows about it. So that plays very well, and they sell millions of copies of their books, and everyone understands the stories, or they see the picture of Jeff Bezos working in his,
right.
You know, wherever he was working, and it's just an office. You know, people,
right.
Like, have this glamorous, but you're right. It's like, how many Amazons, how many Facebooks, how many,
right.
Instagrams are going to be built overnight? Well, no, but... So I think those extreme examples can really help. Because I did like the story, like when Jeff Bezos said they had someone who had to run over to the bank to make sure their line of credit stayed open, because if it didn't, then they were going out of business. So it's like, wow. So companies like that dealt with those things.
Right.
And then, like you said, going down into, there's so many people in Charlotte or the Carolinas alone that have started businesses that aren't necessarily those names, but they don't have to have those names. They can just be you or me or somebody else that has started a business. What was that story? Where did that come from?
Yeah.
Which I guess kind of brings us to the point of them just being in Charlotte. We're sitting here in Providence Road, McKee Road, right where our offices. We're looking out, and just the last couple of years, the growth of this city and the growth of the Carolinas. We spent time before we started chatting and talking about Charleston, South Carolina. Like, the growth of the Carolinas, people want to be here. Being in the industry, being in the construction industry, what's it been like from your vantage point seeing this, being a leader in that industry?
It's the Carolinas. I think it's the Southeast in general. I think there's a lot of traction for people to be in the Southeast. I mean, a big one is the weather, the business climate, the people of the Southeast. It's generally a friendly place to work. It's a good place to work. It's an enjoyable place to work. Now, I think of Charlotte, though. I came to Charlotte in 1994. So when I got here, we were just sort of at that end of where you would go downtown Charlotte at night and it was dead. There was nothing down there.
Right.
The first one or two restaurants were starting to open up. But what was really interesting to me when I got to Charlotte was the vision. And there were some really great business leaders that had a great vision for Charlotte and what they wanted it to be. You know, Hugh McCall, Crutchfield, those two big bankers, of course they had the capital to make that vision happen. But, you know, whether it's a city, whether it's a business, any type of venture, you have to have the vision first. If you don't have the vision, usually not much is going to happen.
Right.
And those business leaders had a great vision for Charlotte and what it could be. And they made it happen. And I think that vision is still alive. I think it's maybe not as focused as it was 25 years ago, 20 years ago, but I think it's still there. The other thing about Charlotte that was really unique, that I found unique when I got here, was sort of this public-private partnership. The two melded together very well. In other words, the public entities reached out to the private organizations for assistance, and the private organizations depended on the public entities to do what they needed to do. And they really made that partnership work. And I think that's been a great way that Charlotte's been able to grow. And the other thing, I think the third thing that I feel is fairly unique about Charlotte, and I get to go to a lot of different cities, and my company works all over the country. Mm-hmm. So I've been in every major city in the United States, probably done a project in most of them, if not multiple projects. But the level of community involvement in Charlotte, I think, is huge. And you hear that people talk about this stuff all the time, but it's really, really true. And if you don't have a community or a group of leaders that are supporting your community, the community is not going to thrive.
Yeah. Well, you're very involved, I've seen, with the Charlotte Rescue Mission. And it's interesting, when I saw that, is when I first got down here, driving around uptown Charlotte, as they call it, and I came across this place. And I was amazed by it. So we've done a lot of donating and gotten involved with that. And like you say, a lot of companies, a lot of corporate speak out there, community involvement and what type of community. And that's just one aspect of community involvement I'm sure you're talking about. But what was it about the Charlotte Rescue Mission that drew you to them?
Well, so we were fairly heavily involved with the Charlotte Rescue Mission, probably not as much now as we used to be. But what I really liked about that organization was you really got to see the fruits of your effort. You got to interact with the folks that were depending on that facility to get them over some pretty tough times and some pretty difficult situations. They have a great success rate. They've got a fantastic philosophy there in terms of how they're taking it. The Charlotte Rescue Mission is all men. So how they're trying to take those men and bring some transformation to their lives after a lot of them have hit a pretty low point. But I really got to, you get to interact and see those individuals and have some conversations with them and really feel like you're making an impact. For us, those are the type of things that we like to get involved with, where we can really feel like that we're making some level of impact. So a lot of what we do in the community, obviously, there's a financial piece of it, but for our company and our folks, we also want to be involved in some way. So we've done that with the Salvation Army here, particularly at Christmas time, and helping out their efforts as they try to bring some Christmas cheer, if you will, to other families.
Absolutely.
And we're right across, our office is right across the street from the Ronald McDonald House. And our folks are over there doing different things and working with that organization, which is a great organization. One of my clients who's in another city, who's very involved there, got us involved in that. And he basically looked at me one day and he said, "You will get involved in the Ronald McDonald House." And I said, "You're the client? Absolutely, we will."
That's right.
And we did, and we've been blessed by that ever since. So, there's so many ways that you can get involved in your community. And financial is the easiest part. But what we always try to encourage people is, how can you get involved? How can you get your hands in the middle of it? How can you interact with these folks, whether it's the individuals that need the help or the people that are running the organization or the other volunteers?
Sure.
And there's always some way that somebody can help. But Charlotte is a community that really engages, that type of involvement and that type of activity from both its leaders and the individuals that live here.
Well, and it's a transient town. There's a lot of people come in, people leaving, right? And like you talked about before, the growth's been phenomenal. I remember when we used to vacation down in South Carolina, we would fly through Charlotte or Raleigh. When we came to Charlotte, you're like, what are we going to do here? And you look out, and you just didn't even think of it. And when I graduated school, it was like, I was in Charleston. Do I go to Atlanta? Do I go to Charlotte? I felt like Atlanta was too crazy. Charlotte gave me the opportunities, up-and-coming city. You can change jobs if you need to. And then, like you said before, no one's uptown, but then it's grown to a point now, though, where a lot of those leaders that you mentioned before, there's different leadership. And you kind of mentioned, is the focus the same? Because you see a lot of things changing. You see people like, oh, I want to be in Charlotte. Where just 10 years ago, people were like, why do you live in Charlotte? Now they're like, well, we want to move to Charlotte. So much has changed to the point of, you hear a lot of complaints now. It's hard to get around the city, mm-hmm. And is the vision what it was? Is it changing? And I guess that's just what you deal with as a I mean, just a populated area, not just Charlotte, like you said, but the Carolinas as well.
Sure.
Are you concerned with where the direction might go for the next 10 years? Have we come too big? Is it becoming Charlanta, you know?
Yes, I think some of that's happening. Am I concerned? There's always concern. I mean, look, growth brings problems. Growth brings issues. It's not this idea that you're going to grow and everything's going to be resolved. Growth just brings a new set of problems, a new set of challenges. And that's what we're dealing with in this community, in any community. So we've got to understand those challenges. We've got to face those challenges, and we've got to come up with some solutions. Certainly the leadership may be, I use the term diluted. It is a little bit more diluted now than I think it was 20, 25 years ago, because we're a much larger city, a much larger area. A lot more people here, a lot more companies here, a lot more leaders within these organizations that want to have a leadership role within the community. So it is going to get a little bit more diluted. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Does that bring a set of challenges? Absolutely it does. We have more traffic. We have more people. We have more pollution. You can name all these things that have happened as a result of the growth. But it's just another set of challenges that we have to deal with.
Good problems to have.
They're good problems to have. Absolutely they're good problems to have. I mean, you certainly don't want to face the alternative of getting smaller and not having these resources and not having these opportunities.
Well, and you've contributed obviously through community, but you've also contributed through growing a large company, AIM King, and bringing in a lot of new people, a lot of young people, a lot of different people from all over the country to come to Charlotte to work for your organization. But going back on that, when you started this company, why did you start your company? And maybe even, let's first of all go way back there, because I always feel like entrepreneurship comes from somewhere. There's a story in the past that's like, man, I wanted to start a business. You grew up in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Is it something that happened in Kentucky, something with your family that led you down this entrepreneurship journey?
I think so. I grew up in Kentucky. I was born in Louisville, grew up right outside of Louisville in a very blue-collar community there. My dad was a barber, and I never knew my dad to work for somebody else. So he had his own barber shop, and so he was, a true entrepreneur. And here's the thing. I mean, most entrepreneurs are not owners of big businesses. Most entrepreneurs, one or two person businesses, or even the solopreneur, and that's what my dad was for years. My mom, on the other hand, when she went back to work after my brother and I were, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, she went to work for the railroad. And so she worked for this large corporation. And she stayed there until midlife. She went back and got a nursing degree and then went to work as a hospice nurse. So again, another large organization. So I saw one parent who was always fully dependent upon himself from a financial perspective. I saw another parent that was part of an organization, corporation, and I got to see the pros and cons of both. So, I certainly, growing up, had this idea that it would really be interesting to own my own business. I went to University of Florida. I got a degree in building construction, and graduating from school, went to work for a Charlotte-based company, but in their Orlando, Florida office, and really worked my way up to that organization. Came to a senior leadership position. And then at the age of 41, I decided to start my own company. There was no epiphany. There was no singular action that happened that said, now I'm going to go and do this. It just sort of, that idea that I had growing up of being an entrepreneur one day reemerged, I think, in my late 30s, early 40s. And I saw the opportunity and I made the leap. And I started my own firm. Had no reason to leave the job I was at. In fact, I had a very good job, very well-paying job. Managed a business unit within that organization. Managed a number of people. I just felt like that I could do what I was doing better. I felt like that I could provide a better service to my clients. Certainly, there was some financial motivation, but I really just wanted to take that leap and to see if I could make this happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, you said age 41 you started this, because so often now we're hearing from, you know, we have John in here while we're talking, and we talk often about recent college graduates or someone in their 20s and early 30s that they got to do it now. Like, there's, you have, you can't wait, you know, and it's, there's so much time that you put in between, you know, being young, going to college, still being young and coming out of college. You have time and you have to put in your work, and you can start a business at age 41. You can start, I was talking to someone earlier, I don't know why we got on this topic, because they're talking about Bojangles. We're talking about McDonald's, and you know, the founder of McDonald's was, what, 56 years old when he started the business.
Right.
So again, the extreme stories, but do you counsel people on this, do you, young people, as to put in your time, put in the work, it plays out, and then see where those seeds, where those things take you?
Right. Yeah. Look, there's a lot of value in gaining, I call it gaining an education on somebody else's dollar. So working for that company, working for that organization, where you can understand what, you can first off learn your trade, if you will, learn your craft, and then learn what else is required to be an entrepreneur. I tell people that, you know, if you want to be an entrepreneur, there's three or four things that you need to know. Number one, you need to know what you're doing. So if your role is accounting, if it's marketing, if it's, in my world, construction, if it's design, you need to know that's your craft, that's your trade, if you will. You need to know how to do that.
Yeah.
Nobody comes out of college knowing how to do that. Yeah, you might come out of college with an accounting degree, but you're not an accountant. You haven't spent a few years working, whether it's, you know, corporate accounting or tax accounting or audit or whatever that might be. So you've got to learn that craft. Then what you need to learn is how to run a business. And you can work at a company for many, many years, and you can be very good at what you do. But when you're an entrepreneur, you're running a business, and you need to understand what's involved in running that business. Now, fortunately, in my situation, I got that opportunity at probably in my mid-30s, where I was given a business unit within the organization. And I had profit and loss responsibility, I had employee management responsibility, I had to understand issues as it revolved around HR and a number of other things. So I learned that aspect of what it means to run a business. The other thing you need to learn, and this is very important, and I think it's pushed under the rug so much for entrepreneurship, or it's elevated way too much, is the sales aspect. You need to understand how to sell.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, no business is viable unless it has clients, unless it has customers. So if you're selling yourself, which is a service, or if you're selling a product, you need to understand how to sell. And, you know, that doesn't mean a great salesman is going to be a good entrepreneur or a good business owner, because they still have to understand how to run the business. But if you want to be a good business owner, you need to understand how to sell. And that's just very important. And I think the fourth thing that I talk about is you've got to understand customers, and you've got to understand clients. You've got to be in a scenario where you understand what it means to actively engage a client, to serve that client, to provide that service. Now, if you're selling a product, it's a little different. You're probably more dependent on the product than the service, but still, you've got clients who are going to buy that. So, you know, those are the four things that I tell folks. But, you know, from an age perspective, you know, if you're in your 20s, if you're in your 30s, if you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, I don't think there's a right age to become an entrepreneur starting a business. I think it's, you know, intuitively you'll know when you're ready and you can branch out to do that. Certainly, you know, doing it early is going to take more risk because you're still early in your career. You're probably going to make a few more mistakes than if you did it in your 30s or 40s or even in your 50s. But I had business partners, and we started a business, and they were in their 60s. So, there's no right age, I don't think.
No, there's not. I remember talking to one of my cousins before I started my business. I said, by this age, I want to start a business. He's like, he's in his 50s at this point, let's say. And he was saying, he's like, it doesn't matter. I've started multiple businesses in every decade of my life.
Right.
It doesn't matter. You might be 60-something years old at some point and decide you want to start this new business. I think all the things that you said, too, is surrounding yourself with the right people. I would imagine you feel that way as well, because you might have someone who's got all these three things set, and they understand how to run a business, but they might not be great at it, but then they can partner with someone that is. So when I started CasSource, I had a friend and a client, and he says, if you ever start an insurance brokerage business, because that's how our thing started, I want to be a part of it. And he's a business broker. He's an M&A guy. He understood profit. He understood all the details of it. He's the guy that people go to before they go see the attorney and the accountant. So it was, well, that's the person I want to surround myself with. I want him in the room on all these different conversations that we're going to be having. So I would imagine you feel the same way about surrounding yourself with the right people. Like you said, you might have someone who's in their 60s that's been through these different times and can help you out with that.
Yeah, you know, never underestimate the power of partnerships. Never underestimate the power of partners within a business. Now, with that said, be very careful who you choose as partner.
That's
absolutely.
Right. It's a marriage, right?
It's a marriage. It is a marriage, and it's difficult. But never underestimate the power of that partnership and what somebody else can bring to the business. You know, great partners can do so much, and you can do so much more. You know, they're going to bring a set of skills. They're going to bring a set of talents. They might bring some tangible assets, such as capital or other things. They might have an office building where you can work out of. I mean, all of these things are going to help you if you're starting out, especially for the first time. And even if you've, you know, I've been fortunate enough to start a number of businesses, and even today, I'll still start a business with a partner just simply because of the skill sets they can bring or some of the other advantages they can bring as we start a business. So, you know, never underestimate the power of that. Be careful, though. Be careful, though, in who you choose the partners. And,
right.
And what I do tell people is typically friends and family do not make good business partners.
Right.
So be very careful with that. I like to say it's the partner is a person, they can be a friend, but they should have started out as a business associate first, and then
right.
they became a
they
friend.
They could become a friend, yeah.
I've got a lot of good friends, and they're great guys, and I love being around them. I love spending time with them. I don't think I would ever go into business with them.
Right.
And they may not ever want to go into business with me.
Right.
It just
wouldn't
work.
It's like being a roommate. Remember in college, you would be like your best friend. You live together. You're like, I hate this guy now.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, that's what people find. They room up with
ate
their best
all my
friend
food
in high school,
and, yeah, that's
and
right.
they're not a good roommate.
Yeah.
But no, I think, you know, partnerships can be a valuable asset when you're starting out. Or creating a new business, just be very careful who you choose as that business partner.
Yeah, no spot. So you're talking about all this. Do you counsel people with this? Do you work with young professionals that are looking for this? I mean, obviously you have your business.
Yes.
You're working on you've already built your personal brand, because we talk a lot about that. That's your reputation. That's the trust that you built with other people. Are you working with young professionals at this time, or anybody for that matter?
So I actually really love surrounding myself with young professionals. Between my wife and I, we have 5 children between the ages of 29 and 22.
Yeah.
And we've been very blessed. They're great young individuals. They all graduated from, you know, excellent universities. And they all live in different cities than we do. So they've all kind of struck out on their own, and they're truly young professionals. And they give me a lot of energy, and they give me a lot of insight. At my company, we have a pretty vigorous recruitment process. We've paired up with 4 colleges that we recruit from on a pretty regular basis. So we like having that youth and vitality in the company. In fact, we really like hiring young people really out of school and training them how we want to train them, bringing them up in our culture and how we manage our business and how we manage our clients. And we find that makes them into a really valuable employee for our organization. And then I get to speak at universities. This year alone, already I've spoken at 3 universities, probably total 500 or 600 students. I love that venue. I love going to the campus and walking into the classroom or the auditorium, wherever they put me in. And I really tell these students, you know, I've got a presentation here, and I've got a topic, and we're going to talk about that. But I really want your questions. And it's amazing, you know, the college students, there's no apprehension to ask me whatever they want to ask. And I get some really,
all over the board.
They're
right?
all
yeah.
over the board. I get some really great questions. And some of them really make me think of, well, why did I do that? Or why, you know, why did I select this? Or why am I going down that road? So I really like being around the young professional. I really enjoy, you know, counseling the folks that we have at our office and working with them and helping them grow and develop into leaders, into managers. So it has become a bit of a passion of mine, I think, if you will. the one-on-one stuff tends to really only happen with the folks that are working at my company.
Okay.
But the rest of it tends more being group settings and different opportunities I get to speak at, you know, probably 10, 12 times a year to these audiences.
Well, it makes sense that you would do that and have a passion for it. I mean, it's obvious when you come in here, and then there's a reason why you want to bring these people into your company and train them the way you want to and groom them up and go to speak to the universities. It's very specific as to why. And I saw Cincinnati, Purdue. I saw were two of them.
Since Clemson, USC Charlotte.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's fantastic. Yeah, you were mentioning them on social media, I think, about March Madness was coming up, and the two of them in the tournament.
Right, yeah.
You know, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, that's just the way, and that's engaging. So those students might pay attention to that as opposed to paying attention to the corporate stuff that they might not. And then to have the leader of that business showing up and actually answering real questions that they're not scripted.
Right.
It's, you know, that's why podcasting, I think, is so important, because you can have these conversations and who knows where they're going to go? Who knows what the questions are? And it really makes you think, and you're like, wow, I haven't thought about that in a long time. You know, I haven't thought about why I became this or why this happened or why that happened. And it's a lot of fun when you think about it. And it brings a little bit of emotion, and it brings some personal aspects of business. You know, we spend so much time as business owners, entrepreneurs, as in running a business. And a lot of times people say, well, it's just business. It's not personal. Well, maybe it is personal. I don't know, because it blends and it goes in so many different directions. How do you feel about that statement of, oh, it's not personal, just business?
That's actually pretty timely. I wrote one of my blog posts about that recently, and I just reposted it again not too long ago. And I titled it, you know, business is personal, but personal is not always business. And what I mean by that is that, look, you spend 40 to 60 hours a week on business. It's you're there the biggest portion of the day, 5 days a week. How can that not be personal? I mean, it's what you've educated yourself in. It's what you've chosen to do as your career. It's how you make your living. It's, you know, the majority of the people you interact with on a daily basis are probably in the business world or whatever you're doing. How can business not be personal? And I had a situation a number of years ago, and I was fairly young at the time. I was in my late 20s, and it was on a project, a construction project, and I was a young manager, and I was having a contentious argument, if you will, with somebody who was working on the project, and I really felt like that, you know, they were not doing what they needed to be doing, delinquent of their responsibilities, a number of issues, and I was airing that. And at one point, he looked at me and he said, you know, we don't have to get all upset about this. This is just business. It ain't personal. And that just struck a tone with me of how in the world can you say this? So, business absolutely is personal. What you do daily is very personal to you. Now, by the same token, you don't have to bring your personal life into your business, and you shouldn't. I mean, you should have a personal life outside of business. But certainly your business is personal, and I think it's okay to make it personal. There's appropriate behaviors, obviously, that we all need to observe and respect. But, my kids are out of the house. It's just my wife and I. I spend a lot of time working, and I enjoy working. I'm 56 years old. It's not unusual for me to work 7-8 o'clock at night at the office, come home, have a little bit of something to eat, and open my laptop back up and go back to work again. I get calls when I'm on vacation. I'm the owner of, you know, a number of companies. I mean, these things happen. So my business is very personal to me, and I think it should be to everybody else too, and I think it is.
Well, especially when you're passionate about it, it's okay. You don't think about it when you open the laptop back up at 8 o'clock at night that you're like, I enjoy doing this. Can't work be a hobby in a way.
When
you really enjoy it. Again, if you don't enjoy it, it's a different conversation. But people that listen, the people that we talk to, love what they do. But now let's get to the part about, you know, entrepreneurship or whatever it is oftentimes is classified as glamorous, and it's just nothing but good things, and it's not. You know, we're coming off of tax season, although tax season I know extends for many people as well. There are times when you're like, oh my God, this is very frustrating. You have good days, you have bad days. We've talked about young people. We've talked about, you know, growing a business, and you've been doing your business for 15 years and you had stuff before this. Entrepreneurship is not glamorous, but it can have passion with it. What is your take with a lot of, especially social media, because I think that's a lot of the rise of it, is we can take pictures and post it on Instagram and everyone's like, oh, wow, he must be so successful. He's posting stuff on Instagram. Or you heard someone at a networking event saying that they're killing it. Well, what does killing it mean? And what are we talking about, right? Let's look at the books, right? You know, exactly. You can make $20 million of revenue. We spent, you know, $21 million to get there. What are we talking about? So what is your take on the whole glamour aspect when it comes to entrepreneurship and just running businesses in general?
Well, being an entrepreneur is very hard. I mean, I don't know how to say it any other way than that, but it is very hard. Certainly there are some glamorous aspects to entrepreneurship. And certainly entrepreneurship can be a way to wealth. And let's not forget that. When you look at most people in the country who are wealthy, they probably have some level of ownership in something, whether it's real estate, a business, stock market, whatever. Ownership is important if you want to build wealth. However, a couple of things to remember. Number one, most businesses fail. I think the numbers are like in the first 5 years, 50% of businesses fail, and after 10 years, 70%. So after 10 years, you only have a 30%, statistically, you only have a 30% chance of surviving. So it's not a given that if I'm going to go out and I'm going to hang my shingle out and I'm going to open whatever my business is and I'm going to be successful. Secondly, most entrepreneurs are not millionaires. Most entrepreneurs, in my experience, are people who are like my dad, who worked for himself his entire life. He had a craft. He had a good business. He had a stable of customers. And he made a good living. My mom and my dad and my brother and I were solidly, you know, that whatever middle class of the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s. My brother and I both were able to go to college, albeit we had to work our way through. I mean, we were fine. That's, I think, the typical entrepreneur. So you've got to be aware of that. But then there's the other aspect of, like I said, to be an entrepreneur, you do a lot of different things. You've got to understand a lot of different aspects of business. So it's not, is it a way to have some wealth? Is it a way to sort of be the master of your domain? Absolutely. Is it going to be easy? Absolutely not. I mean, when I say there's times where I work till 7, 8 o'clock at night, I come home and open up my laptop, sometimes that's necessary. I mean, right. I certainly can enjoy it too, yeah. But there's a lot of times that I open up that laptop and I just sit there and I make this big sigh like, oh, I've got to work because right. I've got to get this out tomorrow because right. I've committed this to this customer and this to this employee yep. and I've got these other things that I need to do. So it's not, all I can say is it's really a lot of work. You know, you're dealing with customers, you're dealing with employees, you're dealing with, you know, vendors and suppliers. It's difficult.
You just don't know. There's the uncertainty every day of what might come about. And, you know, there's a lot of great people talking about entrepreneurship. And I think a lot of people have their head in the right place and what they're trying to do is motivate people to go down these different paths. It's just that you have a lot of young people, for example, that want to skip steps. They want to get ahead of things. But like you said, you're the proof. You know, you can wait until you're 40. You can have a successful career and still make that move. You can wait till you're 41, 51, whatever that might be, like we've talked about before, to get to that point. A lot of people would also say, well, entrepreneurship, you know, there's no balance in their life. They don't have a family life. They don't have this. And I do agree that I think you have to go out of balance a lot of times to get what you want. If you want to run a business, you're going to have to go out of balance because I think sometimes working is, it might be lying in bed reading a book. Yeah. It might be listening to a podcast. It might be, who can I talk to as a mentor? So I might not be actually in my business. I might not actually be selling something. I might not be working on whatever I'm working on my computer, but I'm thinking, talking, whatever that might be. You might be going for a walk with your dog, and for that hour walk, you're thinking about business or, again, listening to a book perhaps. So you have to go out of balance. At the same time, you have to keep, and you talk about balance, I believe, in keeping balance as an entrepreneurship. What does the word balance mean to you when we talk about it that way?
You know, it's I'm a big believer in balance, And I'm a big believer in having a balance in your life. And I think the first thing to remember about balance is it's all about self-awareness. You know, to really look within yourself and to say to yourself, okay, am I balanced right now? And you know, most of us can feel when we're getting a little off balance. Things just don't seem right. We feel overly tired, overly exhausted, overly run down because we've been spending so much time on the business. By the same token, if I'm away from the business too much, I get to where I'm not feeling that good about things either. I kind of want to get back involved a little bit. So I think, you know, the first thing you do is you've got to have a level of self-awareness. And I think there's also the ability to depend upon others. I mean, my wife is a good gauge for me to look at me and say, okay, you need to slow down a little bit. You're doing too much. We need to take some time away. We need to, you know, de-stress a little bit. Then I think that it's also having other things that you can go to. So whether it's some sort of physical activity that you might enjoy, whether it might be some sort of hobby that de-stresses you a little bit or gets you out of that element, you know, maybe it's a craft or an activity. I mean, I was a carpenter in college. That's really how, you know, construction is how I paid my way through college. I've got an old place off the coast of the Carolinas that I go down to. It was built in 1900. I love going down there and working on that, getting my tools out and working on that, just playing carpenter again.
Yeah.
Nothing major, but just, you know, it's a great way to just go down and get away, and that's what I'm thinking about at that moment. I'm thinking about that project that I've got underway. And it really kind of takes me away from the business a little bit. So I think it's you know, those three things, having a level of self-awareness, having others that you can depend upon, rely upon, who can kind of give you some guidance and advice, and then having those other activities. And sometimes you just got to go out and seek out those activities. And if you don't have one, go find one. Go
find something.
Find something that's, you know, that's of interest to you and you know, go into that a little bit and have, you know, three or four of those things.
That's right. You know, we talk a lot about, there's a couple of things you said in there I want to get to, but one of the things you just brought up is having an activity outside of it. And, you know, sports for a lot of people become that, whether it's playing sports or watching sports or going to games or whatever that is, because, and I think they can become important because of the fact that it takes you outside of the real world for a second,
right,
and allows you to focus on something that's way bigger than you and way different than you, that might not be that important in the grand scheme, is not important in the grand scheme of things, but it is important because it's not important, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, and whatever that might be, it could be it being in the garden or going for walks or exercising, whatever that is. The other thing that you touched on is your spouse, and having, whether it's your spouse or a friend or whatever that might be, someone by yourself. My wife just yesterday, we had a conversation about this, and you know, sometimes it goes deep. It's like, you know, you're going a little bit, like, you're getting a little consumed at this moment, and that's okay. You just gotta be aware, like you said, self-awareness, and maybe sometimes it's someone else pointing that out to you. It's like, are you aware of this? And let's back up, and then I think you can go forward. And I've always felt like I wouldn't be where I am in business if it wasn't for my spouse, for my wife, to have my back, to say these different things, to not be that just always, it's not like a fan necessarily, it's actually the opposite. Oftentimes it's calling yourself out, because sometimes you need that. And I think that's important. And that's, you know, business partners are the same way. And I think that's a good relationship, is not always being the yes person in the relationship, saying, we need to think about that. I think that was a big thing that resonated with me, that what you said. Going back a little bit too, because this is self-awareness that we talked about. You talked about the four key areas in entrepreneurship or just running a business. And you mentioned sales. And sales is an issue, because right now it's very easy to get on LinkedIn or to send an email and think that all of a sudden I'm in sales, because I can send you a message and I can automatically just say, hey, Brian, we would like to do this for you. Are you interested? You'd be like, well, you don't even know me. You know, but that's what we're dealing with right now. Or the understanding of, I'm going to get investors to come in and invest in my business. And I'm like, I get it. At some levels, you might need investors. But what if you just sold a product or sold a service first before ever needing investors? Because maybe you know you need the investors. But anyway, I think sales is very underrated, but it is of utmost importance. You know, marketing's incredible. Obviously, we love marketing. Marketing is the beginning of the sale, right? That's where you create attention. You have a great conversation with someone, then it can lead to that opportunity. I just want to touch on that more, because are you seeing the trend? Because my grandfather was in the insurance business in Niagara Falls, New York, and Buffalo, New York. He owned his own agency, but it was all about sales, but it was the right way to sell things. And you just ask clients at the end of the conversation, they would say, don't say anything else. And he would say, what did you just buy from me today? To make sure that it was done correctly, that people were doing it the right way. And he did things that, you know, I think today are just being pushed to the side. So I think all the tools that we have with marketing are fantastic. And if he had the ability to use those tools today, oh wow, like amazing. So if you can put the old school way of talking and selling people and combine it with today, I think that's where the good stuff happens. But I'm just curious as to what you're seeing when we dive a little bit deeper into sales and business today.
Well, I think sales is a personal business. It's a personal function, I should say.
And we're talking B2B as well. We're talking businesses to businesses.
Right. So absolutely.
Understand that.
And my business is a B2B business, right? I build buildings for other companies. But those other companies are run by people. So, and the buildings that we build are built by people.
Yeah.
So it always starts with my company going into that company and saying, let us introduce ourselves. Let us tell you about our company. Let me hear about your company. Let me hear about what your needs are, what you're looking for. You've got some facility needs. I mean, that's what we do. We design and we construct. So what are those facility needs? What are you looking to achieve? You're trying to grow your business. You're adding production lines. You need to expand space, whatever that is. That's all sales. And it happens on a very personal basis. Every salesperson, I've known a lot of very, very, very good salespeople. Very good salespeople. And I can tell you the best ones are not the ones that you see that have these dynamic personalities, that they're, you know, gregarious and they know the best jokes at dinner time and they know the best wine to order. They're people that know their stuff. They know what they're talking about. They're genuine people. They're honest. They're forthright. They know how to communicate. They know how to sit down in front of that customer and say, okay, let's talk about what you're trying to achieve, because the customer is going to be spending some money for a purpose. So let's talk about what that purpose is. Let's talk about what you're trying to accomplish here and how can we help you with that. And they're just fantastic salespeople. And in fact, I will tell you, the person who brands themselves as, well, I'm just going to go in and, you know, I can sell things. You know, I eat $1 million deals for breakfast.
Right.
You know, they're really not, they may have a deal here, but they're not what I call good salespeople. It's really those people that just are able to genuine and able to communicate in an honest and forthright manner on a very personal level. And so, you know, I mean, I get hundreds of spam emails every day that go on my junk email folder. And it's all people trying to sell me something.
Right.
Right. And I'm never going to look at that. I mean, I can tell anybody, if you're just going to send me an email on the blind trying to sell me something, you're really just wasting your time. Because
right.
I'm probably never going to buy from you.
Yeah.
If you want to find a way to meet me and come up to me and say, hey, Brian, I want to talk to you about something. At the very least, I'm going to say, thanks, you know, we don't need that. Or a lot of times I'll say, hey, look, you know, I don't buy that at my company, but here's, you know, Bill over here to my left, and he's the guy who buys that. Go talk to him. And it's a personal business, and I think it has to be personal. I don't care what kind of technology we have. I just don't see that changing.
Yeah.
I just don't.
No, I think you're spot on with it. And it's Katie, who joined our company in the last like 4 or 5 months, and one of the things she asked me is, what are you looking for in a person? And I said, great communicator. You know, someone who can communicate
right.
in person, someone who can send a proper email,
right.
someone who can talk well, has a great conversation on the phone. You have to be able to communicate, whether you're in sales or not, because I feel like everyone's a little bit in sales. Scott, who's in the technology, you'd say, he's the furthest person from sales. He's giving great customer experiences, and when you
right.
give a great customer experience, they just want more of it. I'm like, Scott, that is sales. Like, you don't think
exactly.
you're selling. I'm like, you might become the best salesperson we have, because the experiences that you're giving to somebody else is that important.
Yeah.
You do have to have there's a time and place, though, once we've talked, because we can dance around the topic all along, you know, but at the same time, it's like, now we have to get down to the bottom line. and then someone has to have the ability to ask for the business, right? And that becomes a problem too. And I think, so the word passive gets thrown around a lot because of marketing and social media and being in the marketing business. It drives me nuts because what's passive? Like, I don't even understand what that is. I don't know if it's daydreaming or what it is, but living on a beach, I mean, it's great to go down to the coast of South Carolina, but I don't know. I think you have to have built something. Maybe you can build a business where you have a bunch of people running that business. Maybe, I guess that's passive, but probably not because you're still on that, open up your laptop at 8 o'clock at night.
I think Warren Buffett calls an index fund passive, and I think that's what it is.
That's
it. You invest in an index fund, and it's, you know, you're
passive
not
to the point of the market crashes. It's not passive anymore, right?
Exactly. No, the comment about your technology guy selling. Look, I mean, when you're, whatever it is you're selling, whether it's that product or that service, you probably know more about that. In 99% of the cases, you know more about that product or that service than the person who's buying it.
Right.
I use the example of an accountant. Accountants know more about accounting than most business people that they're selling to. So if you're interviewing an accountant, you know, you expect the accountant to know more. If you're buying software, the person that's selling that software should know more about it and how it can benefit your business than you will. When I'm out there selling design and construction, it should be a given that I know more about that than the company who's actually going to need the building designed and built for them. So knowledge is really important. And, you know, from a sales perspective, you've got to have knowledge of what you're doing. It's not just about, you know, hoping that they're going to like you and they think that you're a really nice person. I mean, certainly that's important, and, you know, people want to think that, you know, they're dealing with nice people and the people are going to take care of them, but they want to deal with people that understand and have a knowledge and an understanding of that product or that service. So those can be the best salespeople. They really can, are people that just understand their business, understand their product, and can relate that in a clear and concise manner to the customer.
Yeah, simple, right? Educate and all that. I think when we look at what you're creating, you being on this podcast, for an example, you talked about multiple times that the blog that you have, the content that you're sharing, the advice that you're giving to young professionals, or any professional for that matter, that's not building buildings, that's not doing construction necessarily, but I would imagine that has having an impact on people. I know you want to give back, and I guess I'm getting to the point of, because we create a lot of content, we truly believe in it, because I believe if we can have content, I think someone can get in touch with us because they'd seen something that we have done, and they say, we would like Brian to be, let's talk about that, and then we've had more conversations, and that's when you have to be able to communicate back and forth, have those dynamic conversations. Why are you creating content? Why are you appearing on podcasts? You're doing incredibly well. You have a great business. You are giving back, but and a lot of more people are doing this, building that personal brand. Why are you doing it all?
It's a good question. First off, I enjoy it. I absolutely do enjoy it. I enjoy the writing. I love the speaking. I love to be in front of the audiences, whether it's a group of college students, whether it's a group of young professionals, whether it's a group of senior executives, and I get the opportunity to speak to these folks on many different occasions, and I enjoy that. I enjoy the conversation. I find that I'm learning as I go. So for me, I'm a big believer in continuous learning, continuous education. That's heavily administered at our company. And, you know, I just feel like that it's an ongoing pursuit to continue to learn more and to do more. So it's a learning process for me. Every time I write a blog, I learn a little bit more about that subject I'm writing about. Every time I speak to a group and get to interact with these folks, I learn a little bit more. So I think it's you know, a number of levels. It's an enjoyment for me. I'm learning a lot. Certainly there's a business aspect to it as well. I mean, I can't sit here and deny that, you know, it's going to in some way help the business and help my businesses. So I don't make any money off of it.
Right.
So there's not a financial reward there. I think it just really is that enjoyment. And I do believe it's also a piece of that giving back. I get some really nice feedback and some really good comments of that was very helpful information. We appreciate that. I get that on a pretty regular basis. So that's some fulfillment for me that, you know, that maybe there's, making a difference somewhere out there and helping somebody who's sort of trying to maneuver their way through the business world or maneuver right. their way through a situation. So I think it's a lot of different levels. I don't think there's one specific answer that I can,
It is branding. It is you speaking at universities. Is it, you know, someone could hear the podcast or read your blogs or hear about you and you know the multiple different levels. It's like the seventh time they run into you and like, we really need to have him come and speak at our school. Or I would like this individual to come speak. Or I would like to hire him to maybe be my counsel as for my career. Who knows what that is, right? There's the unknown opportunities that I think that I've been using the word a lot, serendipity, like. You just don't know. You put something out there. If you put something out there with the right intentions, I think good things can come back. Yeah, it doesn't always work out that way, but if you continue to do it, continue to put yourself out there, you have enough at-bats, I think positive things can happen, whether it's for you or if it's just John sitting in here and he's taking a bit of advice from you, I think that can't be bad.
Exactly. No. I think that's why I'm doing it. I think there's a lot of advice out there right now. I mean, social media has sort of opened up this advice world. And there's all kinds of people out there giving their 2 cents worth. I will tell you that I think a lot of that concerns me because I think a lot of it is not really thought through. I think a lot of it's not based on real world applications. I think a lot of that advice is offered by individuals that have never run a business, a real business, and have never had to be responsible for a P&L or for a large payroll, for scores of employees and for customers and products. So I think that although there's a lot of advice out there, I just think you have to be careful with it.
Yeah.
So what I try to do and what I do is base whatever advice I give on applications that have happened, that I've experienced, that have happened in my career. So I think about a situation like I just talked about, the business is personal versus, personal is not business. I mean, that was something that really happened to me. It resonated with me. And I feel like I can talk about that and people can relate to that. So a lot of times when I speak, it's a lot of stories. And I'll relate it back to I'll make a point and I'll relay it back to a story or a situation that actually happened to me. I've had a couple of the universities ask me to speak on ethics, particularly ethics in the construction industry. And the first time a dean of one of the universities asked me to speak on this, and it kind of took me by surprise, and I said, boy, that's a tough subject, talk about ethics. And I went home and I thought about it, and I started thinking of some ethical situations that I had been put in, primarily early in my career. And I came up with these 4 examples, and sort of like the crime show, the names have been changed to protect the innocent type of thing.
Right.
But I took that as an example and as an analogy, so I stand up in front of the class and I say, okay, here's the situation. How would you react? Mm-hmm. And it's just a fantastic interaction that I get from the students because it splits them right down the middle. Half the students say, well, I would do this in that situation.
Right.
The other half say, well, I would do that. And ultimately, they always want to know what I did. And sometimes I tell them and sometimes I don't.
Yeah,
sometimes
yeah.
I just say, you're just going to have to
go home and think about it.
Go home and think about that. So when I'm out there offering pieces of advice and offering information, almost all of it's based upon a situation that I've encountered. And even when I write my blogs, it might be something that happened to me just a few weeks ago.
Right.
And it'll stir something in my head, and I'll say, okay, I need to write about that. I'm not exactly writing about exactly what happened, but I'm using that scenario to get a point across.
Well, that's it. I mean, you notice something, and it's like, well, that's a story.
Right.
Put that in a story form.
Exactly.
And it works. I mean, and you use the word expert, too, and there's a lot of experts out there. I think with the people that I know that are the closest thing to being a true expert are the ones that say what you said before, are continuous learners. So you have the person who is the expert on the subject, subject matter expert, and a court of law is a certain thing, right? And it's like, you know more than a certain amount of people. But if you're an expert, the true experts are still learning.
Right.
So what is an expert? How could you be given advice if you've never even gone through this yourself?
Exactly.
But it makes sense. It might play well on Instagram or LinkedIn. And,
exactly.
You have a pot of people that have paid to click the like button on your LinkedIn post. What is that? right? Like, so all of a sudden now, it's like you said, be careful.
Just be careful.
Dive a little bit deeper.
You know, I mean, apply a level of common sense to it. When you hear somebody out there saying, you know, you absolutely need to do this, think about that a little bit. So, you know, I feel like there's, even though there's so much advice out there, I feel like there's an opportunity out there to offer some real world advice from a real world entrepreneur that's still doing it. I mean, I'm still running multiple businesses. I have a number of employees. You know, so if I'm writing a blog, if I'm doing a speaking engagement, I'm doing a podcast, it's a part-time, very part-time deal for me.
Yeah.
I mean, after I leave this, I'm going back to the office.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a full day ahead of me already. So and the rest of the week looks like that.
No, and I think you're right. I think we do need it. And I think a lot of people are turned off. Like, oh, there's so many people already talking. What am I going to add to it? I'm like, no, you had your own experiences. And we're not talking about you have to hit the masses. You might hit 50 people, so much as well. How many people listen to your podcast? Is it 100,000 or 1,000,000? I'm like, hold on a second. What if it's 50 people, but they're the right 50 people? What if it's one person?
Right.
You know?
I
don't know. So I think people like yourself continuing to put content out there, putting stories, speaking in front of universities and students, I think it's needed, and I think more of it's needed. I think, you know, there are a lot of podcasts. There are a lot of blogs, And one of the clients early on said, blogging's dead. I said, no, bad blogging's dead. Good blogging and the stories that he was going to tell, very much alive. And you tell that story, I promise you, that's going to play out. And it has. And it's hard to put yourself out there. And then once you do put yourself out there, a little bit, and you get better and better and better. And it becomes self-talk a lot of times, too, or self-reminiscing about why you went through that experience and what you took out of it. I just wrote an article about a lot of the stuff that I put out there is self-talk. It's bringing up those stories and sharing it for other people, whether it's John or other people in our company or my kids, or down the road when they start hopefully paying attention to this type of stuff, that they'd be interested in it as well, or potential future employees or clients or whatever that might be.
Right.
So I think whatever, all the stuff that you're doing, I think is really important. I appreciate you spending a lot of time. I know you have a busy day. I do want to hit you with a couple quick answers, and then we'll get you out of here. Sound good?
It's good.
Let's go. All right. So if you weren't running multiple companies in the construction and manufacturing space, what would your career be?
Years ago, I won and I was recognized, and they asked me what my dream job would be.
Yeah.
And I said it would be one of these guys that hosts, you know, sort of the cable show where you go travel around.
Yeah.
Because I thought that would just be the perfect job, be travel around and you know, go to all these unique countries and be the host of a cable television show. I think that would still be cool. But I also think right now, given that, you know, now that I'm in my mid-50s, it'd probably be flipping beach houses out at the beach.
I knew we were going to get back to the
coast. Going to get back to the coast. It's going to get back to construction you know, going out and buying a house. And I would not be one of these companies or one of these people that, you know, try to turn around and flip it in, you know, 6 weeks to make maximum profit. It may take me 6 months because I'm going to go at my own pace.
You can have like two seasons. The first season is like a purchase in the beginning, and then we'll come back a year later. Where are they now kind of thing.
Yeah. So I think it'd be one of those two things. I don't know.
I like that. So your favorite social media app for business right now?
You know, LinkedIn, I think, is from a business perspective. I think everybody needs to be on LinkedIn in some capacity. It's just where business connects right now from a social perspective. LinkedIn has that level of professionalism to it. You're going to get some good information out there. There's some resources out there. You can connect with people that maybe you worked with 20 years ago, or you can connect with people that you just met. It's not invasive. So I think, you know, LinkedIn, everybody should be on there. I really am starting to like Instagram, though, for business.
Yeah.
You know, Instagram really allows you, the business, to show its personality. And I think that's very important. So it's a little bit less formal than LinkedIn. You know, any social media, if you're going to be out there on social media as a business, you've got to be consistent. It can't be sort of every now and then type of thing. And I think that is the big thing with Instagram. You've got to be somewhat consistent. But I like the ability of Instagram to show, you know, sort of the human side of your business.
I think it's important for someone who runs a large business on the B2B side to say that, because so many times you hear business owners and, Instagram's for children, or it's for art, or it's for this, or it's for whatever that might be. And it's like, well, it's people. So even if it's a boardroom, there's someone on the board that likes flowers, and they like looking at pictures of flowers, and they might connect, and they, oh, by the way, he runs a construction company, I think maybe he can help us out.
Right.
You know, it's not so obvious maybe like that, but that's it. It's like the human element of it, and it just seems like a genuine person. I think it would be someone we should have a conversation with. Right.
Right.
There's no
right.
harm in that. From what I understand, you're big into sports, playing and watching. What sports do you like watching the most right now?
If I'm watching it on television, it's going to be football. If I'm watching it live, it's going to be baseball.
Okay.
I love going to a baseball game.
Yeah.
I love sitting outside and, you know, just enjoying everything about the environment of a baseball field.
Well, we just had a conversation about this, John and I, because we were talking about baseball and the issues that baseball's having with branding and, you know, attendance and the games being watched. They're doing very well as a, mm-hmm. as a business still, but a lot of times you turn on the TV and there's no one at the ballpark, but if that is it, if to us it's that experience of going to the ballpark and you can actually sit down with your friend or family member, whoever the business person, and have a conversation. You don't, it's, there's downtime and it's a lot of fun. If it's the right ballpark and the right environment, it's a lot of fun with that.
There's to me, there's nothing better, a summer day or summer evening, sitting out at a baseball park
or something to
watching
it.
A baseball game and you know, the activity's great. It's just, I just really enjoy that.
Okay, so now I'm going to allow you to only root for one sports team for the rest of your life. What team is that going to be?
Florida Gators.
Okay.
I went to University
Go
of
Gators.
Florida. Go
yeah.
Gators. Yeah, I'm a big Gator fan, you know, and we've been blessed with a number of championships.
Yep.
So,
the Urban Meyer years.
Well,
and
you know,
Billy
Spurrier
Donovan.
Years, the Billy Donovan, you know, we won the baseball championship.
Yep.
We won it in swimming and diving. I mean, we're it's just a great program, but now I'm a Gator.
Yeah.
Gator, you know, everything else, if I had to throw it all away, I'm always going to be a Gator.
There you go. That's it. So I'm, you know, I have a lot of friends that were Gator fans. I remember the Tebow years, and Urban Meyer, their peak years. I'm an Ohio State guy. And so my parents both met at Ohio State, so I was born into it. It's like, well, you can go to any college in the country. We'll help you out. If you go to Michigan, you're done. You're out of the family type of thing. And then Urban Meyer goes from Florida. I remember when he was there because he beat Ohio State in 06 when Ohio State was number one. And then a few years later, he's gone. He comes to Ohio State. Now he's gone again. But connections there.
When my kids were all of the kids played soccer growing up. And I was not a soccer guy, but I would coach them to where, you know, till they maybe 8 or 9 years old. And once it got a little bit more technical, then I had to bow out. But their teams were always the Gators. Because as a coach, I got
That's
to
it.
Name the team. So
yeah.
my kids always played for the Gators. It's you know, they're little league
it's
soccer.
Diehard. You know, that's what I like about it. I never like was rooted for the Gators or anything along those lines, but appreciate the fans that they're just so into it. It's something that you get in certain. Schools, programs, professional teams. And now, real quick, you talk about baseball. Did you grow up a Cardinals fan or?
I grew up a Wildcat fan, Kentucky Wildcat.
Okay.
Yeah, primarily Kentucky Wildcat. Kentucky basketball was all the rage. Now, we're actually a Louisville family. Cousins that went to University of Louisville, and my son graduated from University of Louisville. And then since I moved to Florida when I was in high school, so that's where the Florida connection came from.
Yeah.
I ended up at University of Florida. So the allegiance to Kentucky fell by the wayside.
Yeah.
The allegiance to Florida, and my brother also graduated from Florida, so we adopted that, or that became
kind
our...
Kind of have to choose a little bit, right? They're
right.
The same division in
the
SEC.
Right. So yeah, Kentucky's now by the wayside.
Yeah,
I will pull for Louisville. But one of my other ones went to Auburn University, so
that
threw a little
bit
of tizzy in the thing. So,
falls in your house must be interesting, yeah.
it can be during football season, absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
A lot of fun. All right, when was the moment you told yourself you needed to make it happen? You gave yourself no excuses.
So like I said, I was working for a large organization, and we had been bought by an international firm, and then another international firm bought that firm. So I had gone through two buyouts with this company, and a lot of changes, a lot of disruption, a lot of, I don't want to use the term uncertainty, but, you know, I was a senior executive of that firm, and every 6 months I was reporting to somebody different. The initiatives and the goals were consistently changing. It just didn't feel like there was a whole lot of direction with the organization. They finally got it under control. And I just felt like at that time, what I was doing, I was serving a number of clients, I felt like I could just do it better on my own.
Yeah.
And I sort of said, you know, I did feel like at that time it was a bit of a now or never at that age. I felt like that was the right time. I had enough base from a knowledge perspective, understanding how business worked. I certainly had the technical skill set I felt like to do it. And I was ready to do it. And so so I just walked in one day and said, I'm resigning. And they asked who I was going to go to work for. And I said, myself. And, you know, you sort of get the eye roll of like, are you kidding me? Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
And, you know, but I just knew it was time. It was just, I was just ready at that point. I probably wasn't ready financially as much as I should be. And I went a full year without taking any type of salary compensation. So it was a tough year. But I just knew it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I had no doubt whatsoever, especially once I made the decision, then it was done. I had made the decision.
Move forward.
And I was, whatever it was going to take, I was going to make it happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it was just, you know, the level of instability, if you will, at the organization. They were fine from a profitability and a revenue perspective, a financial perspective. It was just a little bit of instability, and they were trying to figure out where they were going with this new acquisition and with some leadership, and I was just ready to make a change.
Yeah, so I get it. That. Well, that's it's awesome stories. I appreciate you coming here, sharing your stories.
Thanks for having me.
And spending a lot of time with us.
It's been great.
It's been great, yeah. What's the best way people can get a hold of you or reach out to you? Check
out
your content.
So, yeah, briantking.com. is our website. We're on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter, so you can find us on all of those. But briantking.com is the first place to go, and then from there you can go to the different platforms.
Yeah,
we try to post a blog once a week. Usually it comes out on Thursday. We try to do something on social media just about every day. So some type of little tip or, you know, tidbit out there. But the real meat of it really is the blog, and,
yeah,
and go out there and read those and see what kind of stuff that we're thinking about.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be paying attention. And like I said, thank you so much for spending some time with us
today. Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Brian, it has been absolutely awesome having you on this podcast. From your stories from the construction industry to your thoughts on entrepreneurship, we were all better off from the time we spent with you. The perspectives from Brian on what it's really like to be an entrepreneur are now perspectives you, the business leader, can use for yourself. And for that, Brian, thank you. And for anyone looking to talk to Brian about business, we encourage you to reach out to him. If you have questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can find me on LinkedIn or contact me on Twitter @Eric_Kaz. Thank you for listening to our KazSource podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. Until next time, we're out of here. This podcast exists in large part because of KazCM, the content marketing business inside KazSource, Inc. KazCM is excited to bring the content marketing services used at KazSource to you. Learn more by visiting KazCM.com.